After she graduated from Barnard with a degree in English, Phoebe Damrosch found herself wondering what to do next. And then she found an unlikely job as a server at Per Se, one of New York's premier restaurants. In her new memoir, Service Included, Four-Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter, she gives us an inside look into the exclusive world of fine dining. The book is published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Phoebe Damrosch to my show today. Hi.
Hi.
And it's interesting that the subtitle is Eavesdropping Waiter. Forget about the eavesdropping. You don't like the word waiter. You prefer server, don't you?
You know, I don't like waitron, and I don't like waitress. Mm. I'm fine with server or waiter. And at Per Se, we use the word captain, which is a little funny, but it's really just being a waiter.
But a captain because there were people below you?
Right. There was the person below was the back server, which is where I started, which is the person who serves the bread and the water and describes the different selection of butters and, you know, this sort of thing. And then the captain is the person that actually takes the wine order.
But then there's also those people who just bring over the food. You don't know who they are, but they
Those are the runners. Uh-huh. And then there's coffee servers and maitre d's and sommeliers, and it just goes on and on.
Were you a foodie before you became a waiter?
I was definitely a foodie. I come from a real foodie family.
But a kind of an unconventional hippie family.
Right. Yep. My parents, when I was born, they were living on the top of a mountain with no electricity or running water. And then and we moved to Haiti for 2 years when I was younger. So it was moving around, but food was definitely the focus.
Is Per Se the kind of restaurant you might have had a meal at? Or if maybe you didn't have the money, but if somebody said to you, any restaurant in New York, might you have said a restaurant like Per Se?
No. But I started bussing tables at a little cafe in Brooklyn, and I think I just have that sort of ambition that if I had been a plumber, I probably would have been a plumber to the stars eventually. I think I just worked my way up, and I just happened to fall into the food industry.
Well, do you think it would have helped if you'd been a customer before you served the customers?
Well, when we first opened, we had this amazing period of training where one of the nights they split us into two groups, and half of us waited on the other half. And that was a pretty amazing experience to feel like I had experienced it from the guest's perspective.
How did you even wind up with a job at a top restaurant like Per Se when you'd only had limited experience in Brooklyn?
Well, two things. One is that I happened to wait on Thomas Keller and his managing team when they came into the restaurant where I was working. It was funny because that night the cast of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy was there and they were in my section, and I've never had a television, so that wasn't so exciting to me. But Thomas Keller was also in the restaurant, and so I switched with someone, with one of the actors on staff, and we were all happy. And then one of the really great things about Per Se and the French Laundry is that they hire people really based on personality and interest and the ability to learn and less based on experience.
Well, you had gone to Barnard, so in a way you were back at school.
Exactly. It felt like going to culinary school.
What were some of the rules servers had to abide by at Per Se that might surprise us?
One of the ones that I found really interesting was that we weren't allowed to change our hairstyle. One of the rules was men couldn't change their facial hair and women couldn't change their hair. And
I mean, whatever they came to the job with was what they were stuck with?
Exactly. And I think it was just a way of making sure we didn't dye it pink.
I see. Yeah. Do something that was suddenly going to make you wild or wear a mohawk or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Although the pastry department was really eccentric, but no one really saw them back there. They all had the mohawks and the piercings.
Are there screw-ups and other complications that all the training in the world cannot prepare you for?
Of course. And what the training prepares you for is how to handle those situations. You know, people make mistakes. Guests make mistakes.
Well, perhaps you made a mistake. You reveal your romance with the managing sommelier,
right.
Andre.
Right.
Is that common? Do people tend at restaurants because they're together so much to pair off?
I think it's kind of like the theater, that you spend so much time with these people and you're in this world and you're working very particular hours. So you end up spending all your time with your coworkers. It's natural, really. But we were advised not to do this, so we were keeping it under wraps, which didn't really work.
And your parents' marriage came apart during the time you were at Per Se. Did that affect your relationship with Andre?
Oh, yes. I was terrified and sort of disenchanted.
Mm-hmm.
But I got that back.
Well, your parents had been together a long time.
They've been together for 30 years, so it was a surprise. It was, yeah, that was really hard.
You talk about the glass ceiling that exists for many women servers in the world of fine dining. You were Per Se's only female captain.
I was. They were trying hard to bring people up, and they've since done so. And actually, I just found out a friend from Per Se is now the first captain at Le Bernardin. So I think it's starting to happen at other restaurants. But just like it is in kitchens, you have women chefs all over. But then once you get to the tiny top echelon where people start making real money, it becomes men.
And do you think that's because of an ingrained prejudice? Because there are, for example, many people blame the French for all of this. But you go to France, you find a lot more restaurants with women who are cooking in the kitchen.
But
than even
the
in the
small,
French restaurants here.
Are those the small family-run ones, or are those the
I think
top?
Right now the biggest restaurant in Paris, the hot restaurant in Paris, according to Pudlow, is a woman's restaurant.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's changing. It's just been tradition for a while, and I think it's time for that to change. And I think also to look in the city, you know, there's a lot of people from different backgrounds speaking different languages who are starting to get into these more traditional restaurants. And I think it's partly the management who has to step up and give people a chance, and also guests who are, you know, need to feel comfortable with that.
Were there certain challenges that female servers faced that the male servers didn't?
Actually, I think it was the opposite. I think women are conditioned from a very early age to pay attention to very small signals in communication and to please people and to be sensual. And I think that that actually really helps.
Although I imagine that a man might feel a lot more comfortable slipping an extra 10 or 20 or whatever
right.
to a man as he shakes his hand than to a woman.
Yeah, I said in the book that we had this thing at Per Se, it's like this at all restaurants, where occasionally someone will slip you some money. It's called a handshake or a palm. And I found that it happened a lot less to me than it did to my male coworkers. And I explained in the book that if when a man gives money to a woman like that, it feels like he's leaving it on her bureau.
Mm-hmm.
And women don't do that way. Don't do that. We compliment each other and, you know, become emotionally close. But it's the verbal tip, not the money.
A woman might say, I've loved your hairstyle ever since I started coming to this restaurant and you haven't changed it. But Thomas Keller changed the whole tipping process.
Right. He changed that about 18 months into our opening.
Now, did that really affect earnings? He made it into the European style
right.
service.
Right.
The tip is automatically on the bill.
Which they do at Charlie Trotter's and Chez Panisse in the Quilted Giraffe when it was open. I really approve of that, actually. I think it's great to pay professionals as professionals and to be able to count on a salary. It rubbed me a little bit the wrong way just because I had taken the job under the assumption that we would be paid in a certain way. And when I did the math, it looked like we'd be making a lot less money. But I hear from my coworkers that they're doing just fine.
Well, what it eliminates is that huge tipper, the guy who leaves $500 for a meal that where that's maybe 50% of the bill.
It actually doesn't eliminate that because people that go in and spend $20,000 will leave an extra few thousand on top of the 20% and have no problem with it.
Ah. You devote more than a chapter to the New York Times food critic Frank Bruni and his visits mm-hmm. to Per Se prior to his review. First of all, he was spotted, wasn't he?
He came in once without our knowing, which was terrifying when we found that out. But he came in six times, so five times we knew who he was.
And how did you know? Just somebody knew what he looked like? Because he'd been a reporter before. He'd been on this show. I could have told you what he looked like because he'd been on the show to talk about a book he'd written about Italy.
Right. I actually spot him at restaurants now, and I always debate whether I should tell the people or not. Well, we had pictures of him all over. You know, all restaurants have pictures in their kitchens, you know, with the little caption, "Have you seen this man?" He's an everyman look, so he could slip by, but once you know what you're looking for.
And what can you do that's all that different in a restaurant like Per Se, where everyone is already treated like a king? What can you do? You can't make a new sauce.
Well, you can put in, if you have the managing chef overseeing things, he can step in and actually cook the food. You can choose the best piece of everything. You can put a new captain on the table. There's a lot you can do. You can put them at the right table and just pay attention. If something goes wrong, you can be on it.
Is it easy to spot a restaurant reviewer once you know because of the way they order?
No. In the day and age of eGullet and all these food blogs and Food Network, everyone knows their stuff and everyone's asking really tough questions.
What about having your book reviewed? Did having to deal with Frank Bruni prepare you for the reviewing process and in the book reviews?
I don't know if anything prepares you for the reviewing process. I think you know that someone's always going to be unhappy. This book is half love story, half food, and so the love story people don't like the food and vice versa, so, you know.
My guest is Phoebe Damrosch, who's written a memoir called Service Included, Four Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter. It's published by William Morrow. At one point, you go out with your friends from Per Se to check out bone marrow dishes at three different restaurants. I didn't even realize there were that many restaurants in New York serving bone marrow.
Oh, even more than three.
Do you think it's possible to be a fine diner without having a certain amount of adventurous taste?
Well, I have a problem when I go to restaurants and I ask for a recommendation and someone says, well, you know, I don't know about the menu, I'm a vegan. It just, you know, it's nice to know that the person who's there has some interest in what you're about to experience. I think you can probably do a decent job without being interested in food, but most waiters, I think, have some sort of interest in it. Mm. With that, bone marrow taste was fun, and we often, after work, would go out and experience the city's food, and I think part of it was that when you spend all of your time helping people and serving people and anticipating their needs, you kind of want that same thing done for you when you leave.
But what about the customers there? Somebody comes into Per Se and orders a meal, the meal that's closest to the safe meal you could have ordered at any restaurant in the world.
Right. Well, we had tasty menus there, so that would require them to go through and tell you exactly what they liked and didn't like, which happened all the time. And I really came up with certain standard things, like the tasting menu for the pregnant woman. I got that down, you know, telling her about the mercury in the fish and whether the milk was raw milk or not in the cheese. And then you'd have the picky guests, and then you'd have the kid who wanted kid food, and you got to figure it out.
Why is the food and the experience of dining at Per Se so highly valued? I know there's always that question, is anything really worth it? Is a $200 bottle of champagne all that much better than a $30 bottle of champagne?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the food, when my mom came in to eat, she had about a six-hour lunch, and I really had to prepare her for what the bill was going to be, because even my mother had to pay. And I really told her that it was much more of an experience. It's like buying a plane ticket or a show ticket, you know, to the opera. You have to think of it as a memory and not just as calorie consumption.
You have all sorts of tips for fine diners. What are some of the most important rules that we should remember?
Well, I think over-familiarity is uncomfortable for, at least for me as a waiter. I didn't like when people wanted to know what else I did outside of my job, as if what I was doing wasn't good enough.
But I've been on the other side where a waiter was a little too friendly. I thought, you know, there's that weird line
right. Where
you don't want them to be cold. You don't want them to be too friendly.
Right. Well, if that's the goal of a waiter, is to try to figure out what you need from me. You know, so what's your level of intimacy? Laura Cunningham, who is the woman who designed the service standard at the French Laundry, she had this idea of a bubble, that everyone has a surrounding space around them, that they're uncomfortable when you enter that, and then it's your job to figure out where that bubble is and what's going to make someone comfortable.
We should make it clear that the French Laundry is a restaurant in, what is it,
in Yountville, in Napa Valley.
Napa Valley, that Thomas Keller took over after he left New York, where
right. He
had a number of failed restaurants, and suddenly was declared the greatest chef in America. And then
right,
he came back to New York and opened Per Se.
He was the prodigal son, and he was embraced.
Did you know all along that you'd be writing a book?
No. I was getting my MFA at Sarah Lawrence, so I was trying out things. And what I was writing about was food, because that's what I was thinking about all the time. But initially I thought I wanted to do a kid's book, and I couldn't sell a kid's book. But I guess only Madonna can write kid's books. Then I talked to my agent about it, and he really thought that I should work on a memoir, and it worked out.
What about the staff at Per Se? Were they excited, or are they a bit upset that there are some things that you expose that they might not want the world to know about?
I think people were a little nervous, and probably still are. I tried to write a pretty respectful book. I wasn't really interested in spending my life with a snarky book.
But you had an agent, so you knew all along that you were going to pursue a different career, that this was only a temporary job.
No, I got the agent after I left. So I left and kind of felt like I was jumping off a cliff. I had no idea what I was about to do and whether it would work, and thank God it did.
Why did you leave? A restaurant like that can really mean quite a respectable income.
Right. Yeah.
You may have made more than some of the people you were serving.
For sure. No, there were captains that were making six figures. I mean, and whereas in publishing, I would have started at $20,000+. So, yeah, I could have stayed and had a very comfortable life, and now I don't. But it just wasn't something that I wanted to do. I wanted a little bit more control, or, you know, the semblance of control over my life.
And you mentioned that you might want to be a food critic.
Maybe. I would like to do food writing. I'm not sure. I don't think I could get in there. I know so many people who work in restaurants now. I think I'd have to move, and I can't leave the city.
Well, you could change your name. You could be the, you know, some kind of anonymous critic, and maybe that's a better way to go about it, to actually be known in the restaurant but not necessarily have your name on the byline.
That's possible, yeah. I think it would be really great to have some critics who had actually worked in restaurants on either side, so they know what it feels like.
You mentioned that a restaurant reviewer like Frank Bruni will get special treatment for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. What about other people? Because it is the paranoid fantasy of the person who has always dreamed of going to Per Se,
right.
Called 2 months in advance, got the reservation, that the celebrity at the next table who probably called yesterday is getting a much better meal.
Well, you know, that happened, and we had some complaints about that, that at one table someone would get an extra 12 courses, and it's hard for the other person sitting next to you, for that to happen. And I think we really made an effort to make sure that the people, the surrounding tables, felt like they were getting equal attention. But, you know, if it's the chef's brother who comes in, he'll be lavished with attention.
And then the chef comes over and talks to some people and not to others.
Right. He didn't do that too much. Actually, when Thomas was in town, he strolled through a bit, but he usually was in the kitchen.
Now, do you go to a lot of fancy restaurants now?
I do. I have a weakness for going to new restaurants just to see that look of terror in their face that I remember so well, and then going back 3 months later to see them so comfortable.
You also, as you say, you know a lot of people in the field. You can go to a restaurant and suddenly there's the sommelier, somebody who was an assistant sommelier at Per Se.
Right. Restaurant people hop around. So if you want to see your friends, you have to go see them where they're working, which is really fun. And you get all this free stuff and, you know, to try you get the inside scoop on the menu. Here's what you have to have and here's what not to have.
Well, I'm not going to reveal some of the other juicy details that people will discover in this book. But I want to thank you so much for being with us. Phoebe Damrosch, who is a graduate of Barnard and at Columbia and holds an MFA from Sarah Lawrence, has written a memoir called Service Included, 4-Star Secrets of an Eavesdropping Waiter. Yes, if you are having an argument over dinner, the waiter does notice. The book is published by William Morrow. And Phoebe Damrosch will be giving a talk and signing books tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Border Store at Columbus Circle in the same building as the restaurant she used to work at.
Right by the women's locker room.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.